game bang, video game bang, video game bang. Video game bang, video game bang, video game bang.
Video game.
Mega Ran. Live from the sack, it's the live, it's in fact. I'm putting rhymes on this track to put my guys on the map. Cause they giving you the latest on everything on your playlist. This bet the safest from basements to greatness. Updates, geek news, tech talk, and reviews. They can summarize it so you ain't gotta breeze through. Listen once and you're forever fans. And I'm not saying it because their theme song features Mega Ram. Might think you fly, but ain't nice as my guys. Got eyes on the prize, so like and subscribe. We back in the booth. I think that they gon' eat this up. The ultimate source of all geek media. Other podcasts, they just don't match up. Need proof? You can check the archives and catch up. Stats off the chain, we have rearranged the game. It'll never be the same. Now it's time to feel the bang.
What is up, my pizzas? Video Game Bang episode 500 is here. I hope you enjoyed that brand new theme song with Mega Ran hooking us up. It's so fucking cool. Now, we totally need to up our game to be as cool as that theme song. He's always as cool as that theme song. Curtis Fisher, what is up, man?
Yo, that thing gave me a second win, bro. Like, hey, that thing kicked in. I started doing all my dance moves that I don't really show people usually. So you got it exclusive right here. Twitch, you better tune in.
David Webb, what's going on, this, man? What you think of it?
That was dope. Like, that's probably like the most hyped I've been to start a show, to be honest. Like,
that's exactly what we need.
We have our own theme song.
Yeah.
Like,
with lyrics.
With lyrics.
By an artist who travels around the world making music.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Nexus is here, was here. I don't know what's going on anymore. Nexus what's up?
Is. Hello.
Nexus just is. What did you think of the theme song, Nexus?
It was awesome. It was super rad. And there should very much so be a video to accompany that.
I think a music video is nice.
Snap.
You need like a whole like title intro thing going on. Like,
I tried to pass you the dance.
Yeah, no.
You denied it. Like, hardcore.
No. No, I'm not there for that.
And joining us as a special guest for the first part of episode 500, the creator of that beautiful song, Mega Ran himself. What is going on, Mega Ran?
Hey, what's up, guys? I'm glad you enjoyed the song. It was my honor to create it. You guys are awesome, and I felt like the least you could do is have an awesome theme to kind of some superhero music, you know?
That's what it feels like.
You know what's crazy?
Get people excited about the show. But yes, we got to shoot a video. We got to all get together or something and just have like a cool video going.
Yes. I'm so here for that.
Well, you go on tour all the darn time. When's the next time you're coming to Sacramento?
I may be in that area in September.
Oh,
but I know I'll see you at like TwitchCon or some other.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Let's do it.
That's how I met Mega Ran. Is just we interviewed MC Lars. Got to be a couple years ago. And
no, I think it was just last year. But
it was when his game came out.
Oh snap! You're right.
Yeah, it's when his game came out, the mobile game, and we interviewed him, and so we were doing our research, and then we saw he was on tour, and we were looking into all the other artists, and we saw you were on there, and then I met you in Washington D.C. for an event with Nairo, where you guys casted a 2K event. Was that what it was?
Yeah, it was a 2K tournament. That was a lot of fun. That's where I met you. That was a really cool time.
Yeah, and then we just see each other. It's one of those things. You meet at one event, and then you just see each other at all the events, and then you just start hanging out. And then you got talking. I was like, dude, episode 500 is coming up. I need a banger. And Mega Ran came through, man.
Thank you. That's huge, 500, man. Congratulations, guys. I mean, that is no small feat for podcasts. I've never done 500 of anything. So, like, that's dope.
Thank you.
We're struggling on my podcast. We're 130 or so in. And, like, man, every day I'm like, wow, that number is huge. but 500, man, that is commendable in this day and age, you know?
Dude,
people stop and start podcasts and projects all the time. So that's a testament to you guys' longevity, staying power, and greatness to be around for that long.
You're way too nice. You're way too nice.
That's awesome.
Dude, so you're doing crazy stuff all the time. So your podcast is, of course, called Matt Mania. It's a wrestling podcast. But not only did you do that, you're actually like really into the wrestling scene. You've been on WWE like TV before, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was just there as an extra. You know, I was asked to be kind of a background player in a really cool segment. They did a rap battle in the ring. Hanging out, I got to dress up and act silly. It was great, man, to be cast as an extra. Like, that was really cool.
Well, you were with the New Day, right?
Yes, we were like Team New Day, and we're like supporting them during their rap battle. So that was like some of the most fun I've ever had.
Hey, and really, like, what were you saying? Yeah. Go ahead.
Meeting all the wrestlers and stuff was super cool, but just like walking down that ramp is just like a moment I'll never forget, you know.
It's funny that you say that, because I tell nobody knows, not even people that live with me, because I always do it when my door is closed. But most of the time, every time I walk into my bathroom in my room, I always do the Jeff Jarrett. I strut to the throne. The strut. That's all I'm gonna say.
The strut, the classic strut.
That's right.
Oh man, Jeff Jarrett's a legend for that.
Exactly.
One of the other things too, I saw you had some Twitter beef with Bully Ray, or many would know him as Bubba Ray Dudley. Was coming at you on Twitter. What was up with that?
We went kind of beyond that. I mean, turns out Bully's not a fan of rap. And he made that known. So Ring of Honor was nice enough to have me come and do a song. And then and this guy just like interrupts the whole moment. Like, here I am in the ring having like the time of my life, and he interrupts this moment, you know, just to kind of cut me off and say rap sucks and you're a nerd, and, you know, like just being like a bully, which is what he is. And so, you know, it kind of soured me on the situation, but I got a chance to perform it at Madison Square Garden at their big show this past April. So that was really cool. But yeah, man, this guy just won't leave me alone, man. I mean, that's just kind of what he is. He's a bully, and, you know, picking on guys who, like, this isn't even my world. Like, I grew up as a fan, you know, and I hated the fact that he was kind of looking down on my fandom. Like, the fact that I appreciated what these guys did, and, you know, you're known as like a mark if you're really, really into it. And yeah, it's like, that's kind of like not fair, you know what I mean? So yeah, he was not very nice, but still I got to live a dream, and I'm okay, and I didn't have to get like knocked over the head to enjoy my dream, you know.
Hey,
I'm
don't
not concussed,
don't even sweat it, bro. Next time me and you together, you throw him off the rope, we're gonna catch him with a 3D and turn the whole thing around.
There we go. I'm with that.
You know what? I was a fan of the Dudleys back in the day. I really was. Me too, man. And then I saw him coming at my boy Mega Ran, and I was getting heated. You know,
yeah, like, man. Emma, that was not cool.
Emma, our other co-host, every day you go on her Twitter, she's yelling at somebody. Just like what she likes to do for fun.
Right.
And me, if I see things that bother me, I let it go. But when I see fucking Bully Ray coming at Mega Ran for doing what he loves, I let him have it in the comments section.
Make you feel a certain type of way when they're messing with your homeboy.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel you.
Yeah, man. I had a lot of, I will say, man, the Twitter community really rallied, and like people were like stood up to Bully and like let him know that wasn't cool. And I really appreciate it, man. I had so much love and support that let me know that, you know, I'm not in the fight alone, which meant a lot.
So I don't know if it's a midlife crisis. I've always been a fan of music, you know, in general, and DJing has always been like one thing on my plate that I've always been like, man, that'd be so cool. I have so much respect. It looks cool to do. And then I was expressing this to Curtis, and he was like, dude, it's not that hard. And he brought over some equipment and gave me like a mini lesson. But then I watch your streams. You stream on twitch.tv as well. And you, that's what you do. You do live, DJing, and then you'll even, I've got to get the right nomenclature. You throw bars on top of it occasionally?
Throw bars? Occasionally I throw bars on top of it. I do. I stream a couple days a week, and on Tuesday I call it Tuesday, where like I'll just spin and DJ all day, and I'll have people send me new tracks and things like that. And it's really my practice time, you know. I picked up the turntables, so to speak. I use a controller, but I'm not like a true DJ using needles and records and crates and all that. But I picked it up just because I enjoyed, you know, playing good music at parties and having a good time. So I started playing a little bit at home. People were like, man, you're pretty good at this. Like, I've been around rhythm for quite some time. I've been rapping and making beats. So I know something about rhythm and how to keep a groove going. So so DJing was kind of a natural progression for me. And I used to get offered a lot of gigs from, and it was basically a matter of necessity. Like E3 would be like, hey, we want you to come, but we're looking for a DJ, not necessarily like a rapper to yell at people. We just want somebody to play some like some mellow tunes in the background. And I'd be like, well, I'm not a DJ. And they'd be like, ah, well, too bad.
Oh, well, thanks anyway.
We'll give this $1,000 check to someone else, you know, like, sorry. And I'm like, no, I want that. So I just started going back into the lab, and my DJ, DJ DN3, was nice enough to give me lessons. And he's like, man, you got this. Like halfway through the first lesson, he's like, oh man, you know what to do. Just feel it. You know, it's all about a vibe and a you know, energy in the room. And, you know, and it's like, that is just like when I'm freestyle rapping, you know? So it's very similar, you know, being able to be on the fly. There's no set playlist. There's no set order of songs. Like, I love that. So it's a natural progression, and it's been a lot of fun. I've DJed like 4 gigs now, and they've all been like really like hot, like dope, high profile gigs. I did South by Southwest.
Nice.
I did.
Oh, you did that with Events DC, right?
Yeah, that was Events
DC. Damn it. I was supposed to go to that event and I couldn't. That was the reason I wanted to go.
Oh, that was dope. That was my debut. Yeah. Oh, that was the first Bang Ran DJ set. So then, you know, so I've been able to do like really big gigs. Wrestling StarCast, they had this big wrestling convention at Caesar's Palace in Vegas. They had me DJ their party. So like, I've been kind of like lucky that my first few gigs have been like dope gigs. Like,
yeah,
not like my first rap gigs that were in like basements, you know.
Hey, the basement shows was fun though. Don't diss the basement.
I'm not knocking them at all. That was like, that's where you earn your chops. You know? Hey, like, I love that.
Yeah, no, real talk. The funnest show, because same thing. I used to do a lot of rapping and music and all that stuff. The funnest show I ever did was in someone's living room, and it was, and we never performed in a house before. And all I remember, like, everybody thought we were there to be like a comedy troupe. I don't understand how they didn't know what we were there for, but adamantly wanted us to come. I guess it sounds kind of similar with what, you know, your offers, Megaram. But all I remember is that my brother started the music. Malik went, grabbed someone's drink, drank it. I ran out the front door all the way around the back and came back through the back literally right in time to start my verse. And I remember Malik one time, he just like got on the ground and he was just punching the carpet for like 60 seconds straight. It was the dopest show we've ever had. Everybody missed
that
it.
That sounds amazing. I've had some really dope like house parties too. And yeah, we were actually, Lars and I were talking about trying to do a house party tour one day.
Oh, heck yes.
Like, I really want to do that. I think I love unconventional venues. Those are always like the most fun shows.
Yes.
People have the best times. So one day, we're going to do the house party and library tour.
Like, that's, you know, dope.
Be like living rooms to libraries. Like, that's what I want to do on a tour one day. Then you don't have to worry about like people spilling beer on your, well, yeah, you will have to worry about that at a house party. Yeah. But yeah, like you're just there to have fun. Like, nobody's worried about, oh, how many tickets did you sell? And right, you know, talk to you to get in, and you know, all exactly, that weird stuff. It's just a good time. So yeah. I want to get back to that, you know, because I think that's where it's the most fun, when it's the most innocent.
Definitely.
Well, yeah, again, I know your time is short, and we want to thank you for the time you were able to help us out here,
of course,
helping us create this song, and you know, just being a positive.
So I have to ask, is the song going to play like every week before you start? Is that going to be like the thing?
Yeah.
I'm hyped.
Yeah, man.
That's what's up. I get to be theme music. That's dope.
Yeah.
Well, it's like you understand, and you're a perfect example of someone who just gets who's worked hard to make a living out of just the things they love. From, you wouldn't think, you know, a touring rap artist would also be, you know, doing DJ and running a podcast for wrestling. So you are like the ideal, you know, person to look to, is like, hey, you know, you do what you want and you make it work by hook or by crook. So thank you.
Absolutely. I got told a long time ago by an ex-girlfriend that you'll make time for the things that you love. And she was so right. I didn't even have to say it. The punchline. No, that's that, but but it was so real because I would always be like, but you're so far away. You live so far. Oh, man, I got to get on 3 highways to come see you. And and she'd be like, come on now. Like, if you really want to do something, you'll find a way. And I was like, you're right. Bye. And so, yeah, like that was what I had to learn. If you really want it, you want it bad enough, you'll do it. And everyone says, I think you got something when people say, hey, man, that's a really weird idea. You're sure about that? That's when you're on to something, because it probably means no one's done it yet. Yeah. So that's the time to set your goals toward that thing. And I mean, rapping, you know, video game based hip hop, like no one thought that could be a thing. I mean, all the things I do, they weren't a thing 10, 15 years ago. So I'm really fortunate to be able to do what I love, but recognizing that it is hard work. But I'm lucky because I'm my own boss, and my boss is nice most of the time.
Heck yeah, man. You got to come back for episode 1,000, please, man.
Before that, we got to have you back.
How about before that? I'll be back anytime you guys have me.
That sounds good.
501.
See you next week.
Hey, so see you tomorrow. Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate the time and the chat. I got to go now do my own podcast. Shameless plug, the Matt Mania podcast is wherever you get podcasts. If you want to talk wrestling, TV, video games, and whatever else we're doing in life, go on and log on to Matt Mania podcast. We're also on Patreon and on Twitter. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Take it easy, man.
Thanks, man.
Appreciate you guys.
Later. Thanks. Later.
Man, you know what? It's crazy because, you know, the podcast means so much to me. Like, and it's been a part of my life for a long time now. And I've loved the original theme song. Mm-hmm. Originally, when I first heard it, my friend Kyle, really good friend of mine, made it. And it's been the sound. It's been the theme song. So, you know, when you ask someone to make it, there's like this huge, like, oh, what if I don't like it? Like,
right.
It's Mega Ran. You know, he's like, I don't want to offend him. I like him a lot, you know, so... But I heard a lot of the beats he has on his albums and stuff on Spotify, and they're just so good. Like, they're all like really good. So I had this trust. He gave me the first cut of just the instrumental, and a relief. I was like, oh my god,
right, exactly.
It's gonna be good.
Yeah. Thank God it's gonna be good. I don't want to have to ask him to make another one.
This wasn't like he had to go back and forth a whole bunch of times. Right, he gave me the beat. I was like, oh. Shit, this is sick. Passed it to you guys. You guys were like, damn, this is nice.
Yep.
Gave him very loose guidelines on the lyrics. I think, you know, he listened to the show and met me a few times. So he had an idea for what we do.
The vibe
and just knocked it out of the park.
Dude,
so.
knocked it out of the city, out of the county. That song finished was fantastic. Seriously, I'm stoked that gets to be the song that we start off with going forward. That's dope.
All right, so thank you so much to Mega Ran for the new theme song. We're so excited, but this is episode 500. We can't just stop at one guest. We got to do two guests, and I can think of no better guest to celebrate episode 500 with than the OG, the original gangsta of video game bang guest. She's been on the show 3, 4, 5 times. I don't even know. But every time we do, it's a complete treat. You know her, you love her, Janice Davis. What is up, Janice?
Hey, thank you so much for having me back. I'm, as always, I'm thrilled and honored to be here and with the new crew. Well, David, I know you.
Yeah.
Half a new crew.
Half a new crew.
Yep, and a lot has been going on in the world of Janice Davis. It seems like every time we talk to you, there's a new list of projects and things you're working on. You're a podcaster. Let's give people the recap, because I can't assume they've all listened to the old Janice episodes. We originally asked Janice to be on the show because we didn't think she existed for real. We thought she was a fictional person, like a hero from a comic book, because she drives planes.
Whoa.
She flies planes.
There you go. That's crazy.
She
I think you drive. That's just called taxiing.
She's an equestrian. Like, can get on horses and do tricks and stuff. She was a top ranked World of Warcraft player.
Literally top ranked. Like number
literally
one.
Literally the number one in her, you know, area. Wow. Was the number one. Leading the alliance, I'm assuming. You weren't Horde, were you?
I was Alliance.
I knew it!
You nailed it!
That was going to be a plot twist.
She's Alliance. No way. Janice on her worst day would never be on the Horde.
I was ready to just yell for the Horde. I was here for it.
I knew right when he asked it. I was like, oh man, audience divided. Here we go.
Right out the gate, controversy.
Many people would think that's enough. No, no, she didn't. Then she wrote a novel based off of video games. It's like it's an MMO syndicate, crime syndicate, where this person gets in over their head and they have to fight against like a real life crime who organized it's it'd blow your mind, called the Holder's Dominion.
My mind is already blown.
Yes, hackers. I mean, come on, MMOs.
Most people would have stopped there. They would have said, I've done too much. It's time to stop. Then she pops out a beautiful kid.
Nice.
Like, not just a normal kid.
Yeah, a gorgeous child. Yeah.
And then starts writing for video games.
What?
Yeah. Holy goodness. And then she's touring across the country with Wizard World and all sorts of other great promotions. Janice Davis, how do you do all this?
Corey, I'm speechless. I thank you so much. I'm blushing for all the listeners. I have butterflies in my stomach. How can I even?
If you forgot how amazing you were, Janice, this is your wake up call.
And I love that you mentioned Cora. That's awesome. She's 4.5 and she's amazing. She loves, out of all the things, anatomy books. Like, I don't know how she's all into bones and the way the body works, and she wants to be a doctor, and that's totally out of my element. I'm a writer, creator, you know, artist. But she's amazing, and everybody always asks me, oh, did you name her after Legend of Korra? And I had not seen the show at the time, so I was like, man, why does everybody keep asking me this? And I would have to say, no, her name's Cora, C-O-R-A, not Cora with a K, like the show. So I finally watched it, loved it. And I was like, that would have been cool to name her after this show after all.
Well, little does everybody know is Cora's actually named after me.
Is that right?
And her favorite podcast is this one right here, Video Game Bang. She listens every week. I think she's a patron subscriber as well.
Hey.
100%. All of her allowance goes.
So what's new in your world, Janice?
Oh my goodness. It's if you could even, you know, add to the list, it has been actually a whirlwind. This year has been blowing up. It's been adding to the pile, if you will. And it started, what's funny is it actually started around E3 again. About 4E3. Yeah. And which is funny because a couple years ago, I met up with the amazing development team at Spearhead Games at E3, and we realized that I had actually tested one of their games for MMORPG.com, this amazing website that I wrote columns for. So I tested one of their games, Tiny Brains, years ago.
Wow.
At E3. Yeah, years ago. We realized it, came full circle, and I ended up writing with Chris Avalone and Nadim Bokira. I can't even say that name, but it's amazing. I love exotic names. I'm an author, of course. And so I ended up writing Omensight with them. And so it was crazy that it came full circle from, again, you know, doing interviews and writing columns for MMORPG.com, testing this game, remembering the team, full circle. And if anybody has not played Omensight, obviously I'm biased, but please play it. It's really incredible. And so, yeah, this year was pretty, it was really cool because, again, for anybody listening that hasn't gone to E3 or maybe hasn't gone to a lot of the video game conventions that are out there, it's just such a great way to be immersed in the industry in a new way. Like, we all can be immersed from our living rooms and play and talk about games and get on social media and talk, but it's such a great energy to energy, face to face, you know, way to really connect with the dev side. And so I had a really great time meeting Randy Varnell. I've known of him. We've known of each other for a long time, but we finally actually got to meet face to face at E3 this year. And he's working on Borderlands 3, and he just shared some incredible stuff that they're doing, their whole campaign and everything. And we actually realized that we are going to be on a panel together at a writer convention in Oklahoma in August. How to create great villains. So, like, it's really cool how that happens. And I bring that up because a lot of people don't believe me, but I'm in my heart, I'm more of like bashful and shy, and it actually takes a lot of energy for me to push myself outside of my comfort zone and be extroverted and go to these, you know, big events and meet people and be on stage, so to speak. And
so I
try to remind people that if you are at all like me, where you feel that like catch in your throat, you're like, I really don't want to go to this event or this new thing, I'm going to be so uncomfortable, like, it's so beneficial to push yourself and make yourself get out there and do that, because you never know who you're going to meet and what kindred spirit you're going to connect with, and then you're going to end up collaborating on something. And I mean, Corey, you know this, back in 2012 or 2013, when I was asked to be on my first panel about Holder's Dominion, they wanted me to speak about how do you create a woman, you know, going head to head with a hacker and tech and video games and MMOs, because that, you know, we haven't seen that. I mean, there's this was before Wonder Woman was on the big screen. This was before we had more of this spotlight on women heroes. And so when I was asked to speak about that, I wanted so badly to say no, because it was like my worst fear to get up on stage in front of thousands of people and you know, have that pressure to speak on the spot, and you're worried about fumbling. But I thought to myself, you know what, there's probably someone in the audience that is nervous and bashful or scared just like me, and I need to share how I tackled these challenges of writing a woman in this really difficult space, and all the true stories that I put into the book that I would get, you know, ripped for when I was in Genesis 11 or World of Warcraft or whatever. So I really told myself, like, okay, Janice, just wrangles whatever power and energy and strength you have, and just realize that you're not the only one out there with this fear, and just do it. And you guys, that panel was where I met this legendary artist who introduced me to Stan Lee, and I ended up writing novels for Stan Lee. So I cannot tell you how if I wouldn't have done that, like, how different my career would be. And so you can tell my voice is very emotional, because I go right back to the moment.
You do this to us every time, and this is why this is 500 episode 500 is the inspirational one, because Megaran is another dude who came up doing things that he loves and somehow, you know, kept at it and hustled until it became a career that could sustain him. And it's all about taking risks. It's all about looking at what truly makes you happy, and then, you know, achieving those things, even if it's hard for the different, you know, types of people. What you said I thought was really interesting was about, you know, that time and how it was before Wonder Woman and a lot of stuff. Do you think, you know, you being at the center, kind of like the heart of this for so long, is it easier? Is it better today? Do you think it's a better spot for women to creators in the gaming space, or do you think it's more difficult? Because it still seems like there's a lot of battles to be had.
Absolutely. And I bet, you know, Nexi and I can connect about this, because I do feel that it's drastically changed for the better. And in the, for example, in the Hollywood space, like, I was just asked to write novelettes for film companies that want to expand their move, you know, they have the screenplay locked, they have ideas for like a graphic novel or a comic to kind of expand their universe, and they've realized that if you have an author write either a novel or novelette or novellas, it's actually much easier to get it sold, to get it, you know, produced, because you have a concrete Bible, if you will. Like, you have this lore document, you have these pages of all these backstories for all the characters, and it doesn't feel as vapid, it doesn't feel, you know, it has more substance. And so it's for example, in a meeting that I had in 2015, I pitched this idea to spotlight this band of women in this property that I was writing for, which was going to be like I said, like they're expanding it, the screenplay, with the world of these extra written anthologies and all these different things. And I said, okay, I had this awesome, you know, pitch about having this band of women that are actually the catalyst of the story, that help the typical, you know, heroes that are 18, right? Because there are so many heroes, like, okay, Harry Potter, for example, right? That all the kids are young, they're heroes. And I wanted to kind of take spin that on its head and let's spotlight the people in our lives that actually raised us or influenced us in magnificent ways. So my mom, for example, is a triathlete. She's a lifeguard. She's a CPR coach. She's very active, right? She's super strong, and she is 70. And so when you think of the age 70, you don't think of a lifeguard, a CPR coach, a biker, a runner, a swimmer. But I wanted to show that our perspective, because of stereotypes in movies, on age ranges are so skewed and wrong, and it's not fair to discount people that are older, that are so strong and fearless. So I was pitching this and you would not believe the producers, they're like, interrupt me, they're like, wait, how old do you want them to be? And I'm like, oh, you know, between 50, 70, that was the room. Like, And they're like, no, we cast 18 to 28 women, period.
Wow. They actually said that.
And so a perfect example to answer your question, Corey, is that this year, being in the same situation and being asked to pitch my idea for this new property that wants me to write novellas and expand this mother and daughter relationship and characters, the tone in the room was so much different, and they would reference things like, well, you know, Wonder Woman, and because we're getting there, it is different now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so there's light at the end of the tunnel if we keep fighting this fight.
Right, Nexi? I mean, how do you feel as a woman?
There's so much, like, whether it be in any form of media, there's so much underrepresentation of women just in general. And typically if there is representation, then it's so sexualized. And we just want something kind of normal. And that's why I really enjoy that idea of, like, this powerful woman who's, like, 60 years old. Like, that's such... and it's so different. And it's such a different light that we're putting on these characters that it needs to be more, like... out there.
Yeah.
Like, it has to be more of a thing.
One of the amazing things about having Janice on the show is that she often likes to flip the script on us. It always kind of morphs into, like, she picks our brains on things. So are there things you're working on? Are there topics that you're wrestling with that you need some VGB counseling on, Janice?
Oh, yeah, I do always do that. That's so funny. Remember, you guys helped me with picking, like, a country for one of my characters or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right.
That was so awesome because it is so difficult to imagine not only the character name, but, okay, where are they from? What is their backstory? I mean, for example... I was just hired by Maximum Games to work on this amazing game that you probably saw at E3. They had all sorts of trailers and demos and stuff for it. It's called Ari and the Secret of the Seasons.
Oh, yeah.
Cool name, right? Yeah. Yeah, and so it's, like, it's super cool because, you know, I love the mechanic of the game. Like, I love that you can, you have this control over the seasons. And from a design standpoint, I think it's incredible that the designers took on the challenge of making it so you, the gamer, can run around and you're in a zone that's completely winter and you can, you know, create this, you can change the season where you can see the same zone in summer. Like, so think about the design challenge of that. You have to design every level, every area in all of the seasons so that you can see them all, the same area in all different ways with the flowers or frozen. Like, can you imagine?
No.
Just that alone. Is
way too much work. I barely get this show out on time every week, let alone be able to take something on that big.
Exactly. And so it was such a tall order, you know, to be asked, like, okay, can you know, we have these characters that had, you know, that need backstory or that need this, and can you help us flesh out these ideas or this lore? And, like, so having to, like, puzzle piece, okay, this is what's already in the game, this is what's locked, this is what we need to fill in. It feels like a puzzle where I'm taking what exists, where can I fit in history and lore that I have to just make up, you know, from somewhere. And it, a lot of it takes like that time of just sitting there and brainstorming and just going over, well, how would this work if you changed, if you can change the seasons? Okay, nature. Okay, what do we like about nature? What moves us? Okay, there's wind, there's tornadoes, there's rain, there's snow. So like I just go through this process of taking the large scope and then bringing it further and further and further to a more closed space, so I can come up with some concrete lore of how this would happen originally, or how you would get this power or the crystals or the seasons or whatever. So it is a really difficult process, and I always appreciate it when you help me, when you have I need to do that more. I need to post more, like, you know, like, hey, so everybody throw out your favorite character name right now for a 60-year-old woman. I think too, like you said, I think what's changing is the industry is the focus to adapt and stretch and expand these worlds. So instead of just focusing on the timeline of the screenplay or the timeline of the game, I really appreciate that all of these development companies, both in Hollywood and in the game space, are coming to authors like myself and going, okay, an author has to write a 400-page book that has all these connecting plots and subplots and characters, which is such a challenge. And so maybe they can help us make this be more in depth and more, you know, substantial. But at the same time, it's so difficult because games are so restricted. Yeah. You know, the dialogue has to be this short, but it has to convey this much emotion.
One thing I've been struggling with, I'm glad you're on the show. Maybe you can help me, because I've been working for an esports company the last couple of years in the content department. And so we have like several teams that are, you know, and I kind of craft narratives and storylines and come up with, okay, well, they lost this tournament last year, but they were in second place, so maybe this is going to be the redemption arc, you know. And so we're kind of crafting storylines, and then beyond that, I'm doing while you're out writing novels, I have to make memes on the internet so that 10-year-olds click like, you know, and that's my reward system, is getting likes and things like that. But it's like a lot.
But that's so challenging. Like, no, seriously, like in its own way, posts and memes and the wording for these things can be so draining. Like, again, novels, yes, they take forever, and they take, yeah, so much effort. But at the same time, I have such a hard time, like, just posting, because it takes so much energy too.
And it's like this, the audience, you know, it's a lot of effort because they're so willing. This is like the Fortnite generation. Everything's cringe, you know. Like, and I'm getting older, Janice Davis. I'm becoming.
No way, you're timeless and ageless.
You should see this beard was not existent. I was a fresh faced kid when we first met. Now I'm just an old man, and so I've been really struggling with like burnout and creative burnout, and I can't, you know, go to the well, and I feel like I can't use this idea because I used that before, and like, how do you keep the creative brainstorm session like going and your ideas fresh and from burning out from the pressure? Because I mean, when your job is to create, you know, for me anyways, you're only as good as your last meme. You know, if I come out with a bad one, you know, I'm a failure until I succeed again. So how do you deal with that, the pressure of creativity and keeping your ideas fresh?
I think it's an excellent, excellent point. And I think that every creative that I've had on panels, you know, gives a slightly different answer, but there's connective threads that kind of bind us all in the same boat. Since I told you that story of, you know, being on my first panel in 2013, since then, I've been on close to 600 panels now.
Wow.
Holy crap.
Jeez.
Yes. So many.
Yes. So I have officially conquered my fear.
Do you fall into autopilot on those sometimes? You're just like, yeah, my favorite character is this. My favorite color is blue. Like, just throw.
A little bit. I mean, there's still, regardless of how many times I do it, there's still the butterflies right before it starts. You know, it's just I've come to accept that. I think I even have that on some of my profiles where it's like, ever present butterflies. That's me. But you know, it's to answer concretely and with a serious answer, it's very important that we remember a couple things. The logistic side of it is routine, environment, and going back to your why. So like, these are like the logistics. Like, you logistically need to give yourself a space or several spaces to create. So before I had a wonderful, amazing child, I had the freedom to go to the library and write, or go to a coffee shop and write, or wherever, right? I could have like special little designated writing spaces. Now I write mainly from my writing chair in my bedroom, you know. But what's kind of sacred about that, and what's really cool, is it becomes your space. It becomes this place that you can turn off your, and I really encourage that, turn off your phone, turn off everything that could distract you, and that you make that this special energy place. And then you dedicate a routine, and you dedicate that this is my time to create. And this is the, you know, like when I worked, I worked at a financial institution, which I don't think you mentioned in your recap.
Sorry. The one thing I missed.
Slacking.
Jeez.
She's that awesome. Not everything can fit on the plate.
We only got so much time in a podcast, Janice.
So while I was going to college in Austin, I went to Austin, UT Austin, and shout out to anybody that loves Austin, Texas, because it's amazing. And I don't know, it's just the energy there, the live music, that everyone's so kind and friendly. Anyway, I live in LA now, and it's a cold and lonely world.
Oh, I'm sorry for you. Oh, it's a rough spot.
Hey, Janice. Curtis here. I had a question that I wanted to throw out at you. I fancy myself a writer, and I'm the only one that does. But but you mentioned something about, you know, kind of going back to the beginning, right? To the genesis. You know, why do we take on these jobs that seem insurmountable and most people fall outside of them? You know, like ultimately we have a love for it and a passion. But so going back to the genesis and you know, in the original love for it, are there any writing exercises that you do purely for fun, you know, that you know may eventually end up in some of your creations, but usually just kind of to either like warm yourself up or just to enjoy, you know, the craft that you're into?
Sure, that's a great question, and I'm so excited we're kindred spirits, we're fellow writers together.
Heck yes.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So I. So your why, yeah, that's absolutely right. I watch a lot of TED Talks. I don't know if you guys are a fan of TED Talks, but absolutely. One of my favorite ones, Simon Sinek says, people don't buy what you do. They buy why you do it. Mm-hmm. And so I realized that whenever I get stuck creatively, if I go back to my aim, the why, what is this, what if it's for another person's property, like a video game, I'm thinking, okay, where do they want this character to go? But if it's my own property, I go back to what Nexi was saying. I almost said Loxy, my own, Nexi was saying, where it's like, What are those moments that fire us up and make us hurt or make us happy or make us livid, or, you know, the whether it's the news or a video game or a family feud or whatever, that we can turn it on its head, or we can shapeshift it, change it. And then for specific exercises, like when I'm sitting in my space and I'm like, this is my writing time from this time to this time. My exercises aren't exactly writing exercises, because again, when you write for a living, you know, your wrists ache and it's hard to write for exercises. So what I do is I look at art. So I'll look at like landscape art and fantasy and sci-fi art, because that really helps inspire me and get out of my own head. I also read a lot of novels. Like every night before I go to bed, I always have a novel that I'm reading, and that's kind of my exercise, my relaxed time, my way to be in my profession but not creating and crafting. Right. But I think it's really important that you have several, even if they're personal projects and you're not working for hire right now as a writer, even if they're your own, give yourself the ability to switch. So if you are stuck on one, you can work on a different one. But don't overwhelm yourself by having like 10 personal projects, like have two or three.
Right.
If you get stuck, like make sure you do those exercises of not forcing yourself to necessarily, you have to write as an exercise, but look at other mediums, play a video game, watch a movie, nitpick and dissect what pulled you in, and then use that as inspiration. Like one of my favorite moments in this novel was I went back to the beginning chapter and I was like, why do I want to root for this character almost immediately? Mm-hmm. And I just kept dissecting it and like looking at how this author was able to pull me in, and then I would try to emulate that in my own work.
Awesome, awesome. Okay, that's cool. Awesome. I had another one for you. that question came about the writing techniques and kind of going back to the beginning, because William S. Burroughs, I found out about his cut-up technique, you know, where he would, you know, write something out and then he would go back and he would cut up the individual sentences and rearrange it. Some seen it as nonsensical, but, you know, it was a really cool method. And I wanted to know, who are, you know, a few of your favorite authors?
For sure. By far, China Meville, he changed my life by far. He's my favorite author. My favorite book by him is called The City and the City. Mm-hmm. And it actually gave me the strength to write The Holder's Dominion, because I read it, and it was actually a game developer that recommended it to me and that said, hey, you know, I just read this book. I think you really like it. Because I described how I love books that don't treat the reader, they expect the reader to keep up. I love that. Mm-hmm. I love the non-over-explaining and stuff like that. I love the way China paints vivid depictions and yet is quick. Like, you better be paying attention, because his worlds are so complex and his words are so incredible, the way he weaves them together. So for sure, the way that hit that book taught me that it was okay to recognize our own brainwashing was phenomenal. Huh. Like, I was raised very, I had a military father. He was also a police officer. He was very, it's my way. You say yes, her. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, her. That is so opposite him, because it's like, no, women do not, we won't even go down that path.
Wow. Okay.
But yeah, he was very much, you say yes, sir, your opinion is like the lowest ranked on the importance level, and so it was all, you believe this is how you live, this is how the, and so this book, for me to read this in college and to be taught that it's okay to reanalyze what you've been told is truth and what you have to do and believe and how you have to act, it was, you know, that moment where you're like, whoa, what, really? Right. I can think differently. Like, it was it should really, really helped. And wow. So he's at the top of my list. And then Christy Golden, I'd have to mention, is my second. She writes Star Wars books, World of Warcraft books, and she was actually my mentor for Holder's Dominion, and taught me. I hired her to be my editor before I even solicited publishers and agents and all of that, because I wanted to put my best foot forward.
Awesome.
And she was great, because she would say, okay, your dialogue's spot on here, but you're failing on your side character here. So it was just, she's fantastic. So those two for sure.
Mentors are underrated, man.
They are underrated.
Man, not enough people have mentors.
I agree.
I've been blessed.
Sure. Nexi, do you guys have mentors?
Oh, David. Like, wait, did my name come up?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Nexi and Curtis.
Okay. Yes.
Right.
Right. Sorry. Yeah. I do. I have quite a few. Having mentors is something that I've found to be invaluable way early on. My problem is, as I'm getting older, I have not been checking in with those people as often. But absolutely. I've got a few. My older cousin. I have some people from my church that I used to go to that I still keep in contact with. But yeah, no, I've got quite a few. I've been fortunate
good.
In that
mm-hmm.
sense.
Okay, good. Hall Hood is another one of mine I would want to do a shout out to, because he was the senior writer at BioWare, and we collaborated a lot early on, and so he's, yeah.
That's awesome.
David, do you have a mentor? Have you ever had a person where you look at them and you say, you're my mentor?
I don't think I ever have, now that I'm thinking about it.
It's kind of an unspoken thing, kind of. I don't know if I've ever, like, said, like, hey, by the way, you're my mentor, but there's definitely,
well, hey, yeah, it can be unspoken.
I mean, I try to take you under my wing, David, as I can.
Since I first met you, I was like, David, will you be my mentor?
No, but you're absolutely right. It can be unspoken. Like, David, is there just someone that you respect in the industry that you just, even if you don't talk to them, a mentor can be just someone that you study and emulate, and you just, you know, you like the way they work.
Oh man, that's a tough question. I never really thought about it, to be honest. Like, I don't know if it's a specific person. It's just, I just kind of watch and listen to different types of entertainers and different, you know, podcasts or whatever. And it's not one specific person that I kind of look at and try to emulate. It's just, I find a style that I like, and I just kind of go off of that, and I find that style in others, not just one particular person, if that makes sense. But I don't know if I've ever had like just one particular person that, spoken or not spoken, I've been like, yeah, you're one person I'm going to emulate.
Sure, sure. But you can't leave us hanging. I mean, you gave a lot of examples, but we want specifics. Oh, you said styles, you said so, entertainers. I mean,
okay, so one example would be so like I like doing like RPGs, like Dungeons and Dragons and stuff like that. And on the side working on a RPG podcast. And so there's a podcast that it was a Star Wars, it took place in the Star Wars universe called Campaign. And it was a long form story RPG where they, every week, they would do like an hour episode and it would just keep continuing the story. And they used a game mechanic called Genesis. So it's similar to like D&D where you roll die, but it's like a pass fail kind of thing.
Nice.
And there was one guy, I can't remember the actual person's name, but his character's name was Trist. And he was always like that, like the funny, the kind of comedic relief, ridiculous, shoot first, ask questions later kind of character. And so when I'm making my own characters, whether it's for, you know, like a podcast project or just like once a month I play D&D with some friends, that's who I kind of mimic my character after. And so it's kind of I look for those characters, even though it's not really my personality, but when I'm playing a character I like that, because watching and listening to different mediums or reading different mediums and stuff, those are the characters that I just kind of I like following. And so when I'm, you know, acting quote unquote, that's what I go after.
Oh, absolutely. And I know exactly what you mean. And I think we're connected in that way, because I do the same thing for my characters, where I try to use an example. Like, for example, so I'm writing a character. Her name is Leader Anine, and this is for Project Nitron, for the property for Stan Lee. And I'm using, even though she's more considered on the villain side of things, I'm using President Roslin as inspiration. Any Battlestar Galactica fans out there?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Please
okay.
say yes.
Yes. No, I'm with you. I'm with you. It's been a while. Like, I have to, like, finish it because I haven't finished the series, but I know exactly who you're talking about. Yes.
Okay. So for her, she does things that I was about to say I can't do, but I'm refocusing my, you know, mental
positive energy.
I'm training to do. I'm a warrior in training. So she can stand toe to toe in the face of conflict and not shudder and not wince and not, she can stand her ground and speak her mind. So I use things that I, like you were just saying, like things that maybe not are my personality, but I would love to get there and invoke and have those moments into my characters and almost like learn through my characters.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's,
Becky,
yeah.
What about you?
I've never really thought about it, in all honesty, like similar to David, but more in just, I've always kind of done my own thing and I've never really looked to emulate another person's work, because I'm just like, well, if I'm trying to emulate this work, then it doesn't really feel like it's like for me, I don't get that satisfaction of like I'm reaching a thing that I want to be, but it doesn't feel like me, I guess. So I've always just kind of done whatever,
like a mentor. Sure. Like for me, like I'm in a completely different field than so my mentor was my high school teacher. Mm-hmm. Named John Ike. His signature's on the wall over there. He came and checked out the studio a few years ago, and I had him sign the wall. But he was a theater drama teacher, and then like he had an infectious personality that I didn't have, and the way he could command a room of people when talking was just inspiring, and he taught me a lot just of principles that helped me, you know, do my field to a higher level. Like one of them that he taught me about was like he became a teacher like young, and he did it not by like going to school, but he did it like this way where you just take tests. And he had an amazing memory from all this time in theater, so he could memorize lines, he could memorize information from the book, and then he ended up becoming a teacher. Then he became a principal like the next year, and then now he's a superintendent of another place. Like, he's like a Google Technology Teacher of the Year. Like, he's just got one of those things that if he sets his mind to it, he can just knock it out. And he would just, you know, rap with us all the time on the side. If you ask him a question, he would give you. And one of the principles he taught me was, like, when he was super young, he moved into a new town and wasn't cool at all. You know, he didn't have any friends, but he could skateboard. So what he did is he opened up his garage, started blasting his music, and then just skateboarding. Yeah. And so the kids who would walk down the street, you know, would see this guy having a good old time, and they'd want to stop by and talk to him. Mm-hmm. And his thing was like, if you are the party, if you're having fun, if you're, you know, exuding what you want people, you'll draw people in. And that's how he started making his friends.
If you build it, they will come.
Yeah, very, very much. And so I took like things from, and then he ended up being a car salesman at one time, you know, and he ended up just like crushing it over there. He said that it was like the worst job he ever had, but he applied the same principles of just like enthusiasm, kindness, and things like, and just core principles like that. And I got away from it for a while, and then you know, just recently started reflecting on things and seeing where, you know, I keep up with him every once in a while. And that, so it's not like I've ever copied him or like taken things, but just through his influence, you pick up traits. Yeah. And like me, and I know Curtis and I talk about it, and Janice kind of alluded to it, like when you, especially for people who didn't have a good home life, like I don't have a dad I could look up to,
right,
or and pull positive traits from.
Yeah.
So to have this guy, you know, that shows me an example of what you can be and what's possible, was the positive role model. So it's almost like a role model,
yeah,
you know, more than it is like a mentor. But not enough people have mentors these days. Find a mentor. If you don't have one, go find one.
You know, I was thinking, I was racking my brain when you're talking, because I was like, there's got to be somebody that I looked up to. And when I was doing YouTube videos, like, mm-hmm, especially when I was getting back into YouTube videos, one person that I would watch a lot was Casey Neistat.
Casey Neistat,
and
that's right.
I talked about him a lot on, mm-hmm, on the show and stuff. And he was somebody who, if I was, if I had like a creative block in trying to do a video, I would watch some of his vlogs on YouTube, mm-hmm, and it would just kind of like break me out of it.
Nice.
Like, even if they weren't about vlogging or anything, it was just inspiration of watching somebody else.
Yeah.
Like, that mm-hmm would help.
All right, well, we got to get on to a little bit of video game conversation. And Janice, I know you're all about the E3. So what did you experience this year? What were your big takeaways about the gaming industry, and what got you excited?
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting how much, I don't know how many Call of Duty fans we have out here, but I just think it's interesting how much like the ebb and flow of the, how the games change, as far as like, I personally was shocked when the last Call of Duty didn't have a campaign.
Yeah.
Cause I just felt like jolted, you know, I felt like this is not like, I just, why are you taking the easy way out? And I, maybe because I'm a story person too.
Like, you know, go like, figure. You're like, that's one less job I could have had.
You know, and then to wonder like the stats of like, well, you know, this many players don't even finish it or don't even start it, and this many players do, and then to wonder like what makes them bring it back or not. And I'm always interested in that kind of thing about how something so big can make these huge changes. And with like Battle Royale and stuff, like do you guys play?
So I play Apex.
Are you into the new? Okay.
Apex Legends is the only one I've really gotten into. Definitely missed the boat on like Fortnite and PUBG, as I'm pretty sure everybody else in here has, right?
Never played Fortnite in my life.
Yeah. I used to stream Fortnite. Those were dark days.
Dark times. Actually, but why do you say that though?
I guess it's more so the stigma against it. I used to play Fortnite back before they even had slurp juice in the game. Like, it was early on, and I don't know, it just wasn't an experience that I enjoyed. I'm also very much like a story person. That's why I'm forcing myself to 100% Breath of the Wild for whatever reason. So it just didn't feel like something that I was all that for. So I never really touched Battle Royales again.
I'm sure the community is pretty darn toxic too.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
What was all of your answer when on Twitter, like, people were asking your most influential video game? Well, to give you a second to answer, to see that, that's what I do on stage, by the way, when I'm a moderator. Like, I'll give my panelists time to answer, like, by saying something about it first. Because I just thought that, you know, it's, I feel like it's easier for, like, let's say the five of us to reflect back to the first games that, like, for example, my first video game was with my younger brother, Donkey Kong. So, like, immediately, like, the five of us could be like, oh, yeah, like, classic Donkey Kong, hell yeah. Like, yeah. And so I think we have this, like, this extra strength, this camaraderie, because we are all in the industry in some form or fashion, and there's a strength in that, there's a voice in that. And but what I want to point out, and what I think is sad, is that when the younger gamers were replying, my most influential game was Fortnite, the aggressive, the attack, the oh come on, the immediate disassociation with, like, how can that be influential when, yeah, sure, someone could say Pong, someone could say Donkey Kong, someone can say Zelda, and, like, we are all, oh yeah, right there, but it's like, you know, to this 10-year-old, that was his most influential game. Why are we discounting it?
Yeah, I think we all probably get that, though. I mean, I'm pretty sure if you would have put me in a time capsule in 2006 or something, and I said Halo, you know, some Tetris aficionado is going to be like, oh, Halo on that new Xbox? Like, what the hell? I had Tetris back in my day, you know? So I think there's a little bit of that, like, just age thing. And I think like, they're going to mature, like the Fortnite kind of, just like I think the Minecraft community is right now. Because
even Nixie said, like, she's like, ah, oh, you know, I played the game. You know, you said you played the game back, and it's like golden days before it was tainted. Like, but at the same time, you know, this kid, like, he met his friends on that game. He, you know what I mean? I just wonder why we're instantly like, oh, that doesn't count as an influential game.
Yeah.
It's definitely like a stigma type thing. Yeah. Like, if I were to answer for myself, and maybe I'm answering on behalf of some of the others in the group, but I think one of the things is the fact that it kind of doesn't have, or it did originally have, it was all about, you know, outlasting the zombies and you got to build a fort and all that stuff.
Oh, I completely forgot that there was a whole
story. That's actually why I wanted to, so you said
something. I was like, oh, snap, that's right. It was. This was all secondary.
And I think that's, you know, even kind of to your point, Janice, that like, you know, removing stories from games and making it more about just the combat almost kind of feels like they are pulling, you know, some of the elements out that you know, we kind of held so high. But I do agree with you that, like, the 10-year-old kid is the 10-year-old kid, and his or her experience is his or her experience.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I agree, like, I think as a whole, because, you know, I'm always trying to separate things from, like, okay, how do I feel personally versus maybe how everybody feels as a whole. As a whole, you know, I think, you know, maybe ultimately, really, you know, the game is whatever it is. Me personally, it's not a game type that I would prefer. So it's hard for me to be like, oh, yeah, you know, I love Fortnite. But personally, to that kid, their experience, you know, to you know, whoever they are, yeah, that could be their game. That could be the thing that got them into it. And they go on and maybe they, you know, create a game, you know, because they had a love for Fortnite. But I agree. Like, I think, you know, the older generations, as we've seen over time, have always been a little guilty of discounting, you know, the next generation that's coming up behind them, or maybe two generations, you know, that are coming up behind them. So yeah, I definitely, I've seen that.
I think it's because it's not for us, really. We don't understand it. Like, I'm in industry and I still can't understand, like, it's just hard for me to get to that spot. Right. To make content for Fortnite, like, it's a struggle.
But to that point, you said it's not for you. But what do you mean it's not for you? Like, do you mean it's not for Corey, or it's not for people Corey's age?
I think it's me personally, you know. So, and I'm sure there's a lot of people who fit into the same bucket as I do, you right. know, a little bit older school.
Yeah, like because like me, I'm not into Fortnite at all whatsoever. Yeah. But at the same time, if someone who is our age is into it, because there are quite a few people that are our age that do play,
that's fine, and make a living off of it.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Ninja's like 40, you know,
in gamer years.
Yeah.
The thing is that people can enjoy whatever they want to enjoy, but my whole thing about like why I'm saying, oh, it was dark days when I was streaming Fortnite, mm-hmm. was because of the toxicity of the community.
Yeah, the community, right. Yeah.
And it's like, if that 10-year-old kid, if they really enjoy the game, then that's incredible, because there's so many games that we all enjoy that there's always been like a negative stigma
right.
against.
But
like,
once they come up in your chat and they start throwing around toxic slang that's exactly. fairly exclusive to the Fortnite community. Yeah,
back in high school, I used to play a lot of League of Legends, and that's exactly why I haven't touched it in years, because I'm just like, the community.
It's tough to deal
with. Yeah. That's the stigma thing.
Like, Corey, you mentioned Halo earlier. Like, playing Halo, you know, multiplayer, like, online, that's toxic.
It was toxic.
It was super toxic. Yeah. And not only that, like, those friendly fires. So if they just didn't like the way you were playing, your own team would turn on you.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And, like, so it's... Like, I think every generation probably has a game that has that toxicity level. And like, kind of like what you were saying, I think, because my game would be Halo, the original Halo. Because before that, I'd play, like, Nintendo games and stuff. And this was, like, the first, like, there was, like, this legitimate story with, like, cutscenes. And, like, it's like yeah. I'm playing a movie kind of
thing. Very cinematic, yeah.
Very cinematic. Mm-hmm. And I was like, holy crap, video games can be like this? It's not just Mario, like, right. you know, running through, you know, running through
princess,
a 2D.
Yeah, save the princess.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But, you know, the other thing that's funny, though, too, it is another similar thing. I think, you know, with us, we grew up where there wasn't a whole bunch of communities when we were playing some of the games that shaped us during that time. And if
that's
there was
true.
That community, you had to physically go to a place where the 10-year-old this day, like, talks, you know, whether it's good, you know, good, like, really good behavior and stuff and traits within the community or bad, whichever one they are, they're going to spread quick because all they have to do is go on the internet and their community is there.
Yeah.
So it is different also from where we grew up and what community looked like.
There wasn't a community. No one was like, oh man, the Battletoads community is so toxic. You know, like, it just didn't right. exist.
Well, see, for me, it was Street Fighter, because I would go to the arcade.
They had a community.
Right. Yeah. But even then, I can honestly say, like, I didn't feel too fearful at all, or like anybody would mess with me for the most part when I went.
You're face to face.
Yeah, but now, I am very conscious of, like, you know, what kind of games I'm playing, or if I'm going and watching a certain stream, what to expect because of communities.
Yeah.
I want you all on my next video game panel.
You got it.
All right. Let's go.
No, seriously, I appreciate so much that all of you have this, like, you're very aware of your own, like, okay, these are my own personal biases, likes, dislikes with these games, or this is, and but this is how I can see the community coming at it from a standpoint, or this age range coming from it at this standpoint. So I really applaud that, and I appreciate that you have always been really open with looking at every side of the coin with video games on this show. I think it's definitely one of your strengths.
Thanks,
Janice. Aww, Janice, now you turned around and you backed that thing down, flip it and reverse it. Now you got me feeling all tingly. Jeez.
That's what Janice does. She gets to the heart of the matters.
Heart. Oh, you can't see my heart, but I made a heart. There we go.
Oh, there we go.
It's just a little delayed, that's all.
Yeah, just a little delayed. No, but yeah, so I do have some panels coming up at San Diego Comic-Con. This will be my 7th year in a row doing panels for San Diego.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so I have a panel every day. We have one Thursday, one Friday, one Saturday, one Sunday. My video game panel is Sunday. It's Sunday at 3 p.m. My villains panel is Saturday night at 7 p.m. I'm on another video game panel Thursday at 5, and my Friday one is with, oh, you guys are going to love this. Okay, Google Tony Kim Hero Within.
Okay.
So Tony Kim is an amazing friend of mine. We go way back. He was actually on one of my he was one of my original moderators on my very first panels back with San Diego Comic-Con and Wizard World conventions and other game conventions. And he created this store, this clothing line called Hero Within, and it's really high end, cool looking apparel that have, like, for example, my favorite is this Batman coat that just has a very subtle Batman logo across the back of the man's jacket. He has this incredible Wonder Woman dress for women. It's basically high end fashion, but for the pop culture that we love.
I just homepage of his Heroes Within product collection is one of our former co-hosts, Maid of Might, Jessica.
Oh,
really?
Yeah,
that's right.
How fun. She's a model on here, rocking the Carol Danvers jacket.
Full circle.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
So,
full circle, so Janice.
Yes, full circle. See, this is magic. It's always magic. When we do these shows together. So I'm on his panel Friday about, I think it's about, like, you know, breaking into the industry and all these different entertainment industries. I think I'm going to talk about the author writer side of it. He's going to talk about, obviously, like, the clothing business side of it, and there's some other speakers. But the point is that he got to collaborate with San Diego Comic-Con this year and make their 50 year apparel hoodie.
What?
Thing.
That's
the collector.
Awesome.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
So
isn't
you're
that
getting,
so cool?
You're getting the hookup on that, right?
I better.
That's the one thing I left off. You're also a model. You posted all those modeling photos on online too.
I dabbled. I was you know, not full fledged, you know, professional or anything. But I would say yes if a photographer was like, hey, can you do this or that? But it was, I'm by no means a pro in that field. But I do appreciate that sometimes the camera can capture such a distinct and very unique emotion or, you know, angle or look. That there's this one picture of me that it's like a side profile angle where there's all my hair, like, kind of coming down the side of my face. I have this really, like, very introspective look. I think it's my Twitter. I think it's my Twitter profile. Okay, everybody, Google my Twitter.
Yeah. Everybody, twitter.com/Denise Davis. Let's do it all together.
Do this together. Because you see how often I'm not on here. I don't even remember what I have. Okay, yeah. So my profile picture for Twitter is that picture. And I bring it up because I actually have a lot of people that comment, like, you know, the classic, why aren't you smiling? Why do you look so sad?
Oh,
why do you look so, you know, depressed? Like, you should smile more. And I think that's interesting because I appreciate that as if you're a model or you're trying to, if someone asks you to kind of convey an emotion or a look, or you even just feel that way. Like, there are plenty of times that's the way I feel when I'm going through a tragedy or, you know, a problem or whatever. And yet there is an immediate pressure for, and Nexi, you can help me with this, but I feel for women, like, if we have a picture like this, well, why do you look so mad? Why aren't you smiling? Like, I seriously got that so much with that picture that I started to think about, why can't I look introspective without causing a, you know, band of questions?
Yeah.
That's for another podcast. Okay, well, back to San Diego.
That's a lot to dive into.
yeah. So I want to see you guys there, and if you're not there, I think we should all collaborate on a panel because I think you're all fantastic speakers and you have very valid and well-rounded points of view.
Yeah, well, let us know next time you're in the Northern California area. We will make that commute.
Absolutely.
Well, that is episode 500. Everybody, you hear that music? That new Mega Ran theme song coming in to round out the show. Janice Davis, where can people learn more about you?
Okay, let's see. JaniceDavis.com. My name is super hard to spell. It's super hard to say. It's Janice with a G. It sounds like a J. But when I give my mom a hard time and tease her, she says, "Hey, at least your domain name is always free."
That's right. That's a super
she gets
tech.
Me.
That's a tech savvy mom. My mom.
You see why I want to spotlight her in, like, the new series that I'm writing for?
Yeah,
absolutely.
So yeah, you can do that. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Janice Davis. I am on Facebook. I have an author page, Janice Davis Official. I do have a podcast that Corey is very proud of me for doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Storyteller Chatcast. I used to host for the Geek Assembly of Geeks, and I did their Gamers Dominion podcast. But they were bought out and you know how it goes, Corey. Everything changes.
Yeah, new management.
Yes. And so the producer said, hey, you should do a story one since you know so many authors and da-da-da. So I did the Storyteller Chatcast, and like you said, Corey, it's very difficult to do a show on time all the time when you're juggling all those things. But I'd love to hear all your opinions and tell me what I can, you know, what you like, what you don't like, what kind of guests you want me to have on. It's really fun to do that. I'm going to be collaborating with Adam Simon, who's a screenwriter. He just did Point Blank with a bunch of amazing Anthony Mackie, Joe Lynch, so Frank Grillo. So you guys should all check that out and support him. He is an advocate for humanity, and he is actually one of the people that helped me be strong in those producer meetings where we're pitching female characters in different ways or people of color. And I really appreciate that he has always been in my corner to help me, like give me ways to say things in a meeting if I'm really intimidated or something, or I don't know how to speak my voice. And he wants me to write with him on his next Netflix movie. So
that's so cool.
That's awesome.
The Janice Davis rocket is just going keeps on going.
Yeah, it's out of the stratosphere.
Because you are kindred spirits.
I'm like, Janice, you want to come celebrate 500 episodes of the same damn podcast we've been doing for her? And then every time she comes, she's like, oh yeah, I was just hanging out with Anthony Mackie now. And,
you guys, seriously, I would not want to be anywhere else right now on a Wednesday night hanging out with you. So I really appreciate you having me. I love all of your listeners, your fans. Your fan base has always been really supportive and vocal and supportive of story and depth. And I'm so thankful for the love. And I hope we can do this again, either on panel format or BGB format.
The door is always open for you, Janice. So thank you so much for doing it again, gracing us with your presence on episode 500. And we'll talk to you later.
Perfect. Wow.
Bye,
thank
Janice.
You
guys.
Peace.
Bye, Janice. Thank you.
Oh my god. And then she does a cute little giggle at the end. Like, what?
She is perfection personified.
I mean, for real. David Webb, 500 episodes, man. What do you think?
500 episodes. Man, this is this is by far the longest thing I've ever done. And yeah, it's this is crazy. It's crazy looking back at where we've come from, like as a show. Like where we like we were talking in between guests. We were talking about the first episode that you and Aaron did, and like you guys have a theme song. You guys had like some random rock song that you played.
Yeah,
and it was just it's crazy. And then looking forward and looking at like coming to episode 500 and all the different things that we've done, the panels that we've been to, the people we've met, the connections we've made. Like it's ridiculous. It's crazy.
It's crazy. It never goes the way you expect. That's for sure. It's been a wild ride. Fans, listeners we've had for a long time. Some just come by for a short stint, but we're appreciative of everybody. People in chat where you're starting to get nostalgic too and like wondering, you know, who's been here the longest and who was the first. I remember our first listener. Like, we thought we were just broadcasting to ourselves for weeks.
Yeah.
You know,
like,
nobody was listening. Mm-hmm. I see the numbers.
Yeah.
You know, and I see myself checking it all the time.
Right.
And then we did like something on Twitter and we got a response. And we were in the middle of recording. We like paused. We're like, hey, do you know this guy?
Mm-hmm.
No? Do you know this guy?
Yeah.
No? I don't know this guy.
Right.
It's a fucking listener. This is before we had Twitch, you know, so this is like our first legit organic, you know, solid listen to the podcast and decided to seek us out and interact. Hollow Monkey. Was the guy's name.
Hollow Monkey.
And then, you know, we've had the
never forget your first, right?
Never forget your first. And then Mr. Howard 123, who still occasionally drops by every once in a while.
Yeah, I see him in there.
Yeah, Mr. Howard's an OG. I'm so thankful for just everything, everybody who's listened, and to the people who are here now. Curtis, man, if it weren't for you, this show wouldn't be going on right now. There was a rough patch there for me, and I really needed a dependable, positive influence, and you were there for me, dude. So
appreciate you.
I mean, I couldn't think of another group of people and person in you particular that I would be doing this with, so I appreciate you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for opening your doors for me. It's kind of the same for me. I was, you know, a part of another podcast, and, you know, thing a fork in the road came, you know, as they do in life, and you know, I was a free agent, you know what I mean, and I had met y'all before and came on the show a few times because you have people from the Capeless Crusaders on, And man, I didn't know that I would be holding down a seat like this. You know what I mean? So to me, I consider it a blessing. It gives me it gives me something to focus on as I continue to go through trying times in my life. And everybody, same thing. Like people coming in, you know, they embrace me, you know, and come and hang out with me and talk about comics, you know, in the VGB Discord.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I just, you know, I just feel very fortunate to be able to help in any capacity.
So, thank you. She couldn't be here, Emma Skies, same thing, man. She's really had a positive influence on this show. You know, behind the scenes, she really does that Emma thing, and she's tenacious, and she keeps us.
Yeah, absolutely.
She keeps us in line.
Yeah.
When she's not on the show, she messages us the things we did wrong. Yep. Like, hey guys, it took you.
You didn't add your comment to the Instagram post.
It took you
How
20.
Are you catching
yeah,
this?
It took you 20 minutes to start talking about video games. Yeah. Like, so,
which we all appreciate. We joke about it so much, but if you. I mean, you know how much Emma does on the show, but y'all have no idea what she does behind the scenes. Like,
she's a thing for our Instagram coming back to life.
Absolutely.
She's like, why are we not doing this?
Utilizing it, yeah.
Yeah. So, and Nexi here with us on our 500th episode. I mean, she's been rock solid in 2019 when when we went through our changes. We were like, we need to bolster the roster because, you know, people get sick, things happen, and we need... You know, interesting personalities that aren't afraid to share their, speak their mind. And Nexus, you've been super clutch.
Yeah, it was really like insane, like for me to find out that I was going to be on the 500th. Those are words. 500th episode. Yeah, I'm great at this. but because what my first episode was in January of this year, I think or February of this year, and I had already known you. For a year prior, but almost like by accident meeting at the San Francisco Shock watch party above Oblivion. So, yeah. And then I ended up meeting David by randomly hosting you, and I had no idea that you two even knew each other.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
You were playing Sea of Thieves. I remember that so vividly because I was still streaming off of a laptop. So this was like almost a year ago now.
Yeah, that's right.
So for everything to kind of fall into place so funny, I just get really like warm in my heart.
Awesome.
my ice cold heart. It
that little
I'm
black heart warms up just a little bit.
Exactly.
Right? That's dope.
Man, countless people to thank. It's impossible to name all of them. Of course, Aaron Carter, who was a founding member of the show. Another OG member, Steven Gutierrez, was great. Laura Benson, Laura Benson for one, huge, Laura Rodriguez, the OG. We had Larissa on the show holding things down. Maid of Might, Jessica Chancellor, incredible person, beautiful human, and doing amazing things down south. Ivy Doom Kitty. Who else? David Ng, my neighbor Marcus. We got Taylor Balby.
Yeah.
Holding it down for us also as a regular.
Jake on the
Jake,
down the
our
Facebook.
Social media guy. Good Lord.
Mm-hmm.
David, spit some more people out we should just thank. His name
drop.
Oh,
man. OG Mako.
OG Mako!
Good fan.
You guessed
you
it.
Bitch, you guessed it.
He has his own segment on the show.
Yoshi. We got to thank Yoshi, dude.
Jada.
Eddie Villanueva, the filmlosopher. Gosh. Man,
so
I can't believe we know this many people.
Yeah,
I can't believe it. I know like two people.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much. You guys make this show special. Here's to many more, 500 more if we can make it. Thank you guys so much. Lost Sheep, Special Cases, Drew and the TARDIS. I'm just saying names at this point. Thank you. We'll see you guys next week.